We're going to call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing. We don't quite have a quorum, but we are going to start on time. And we will take official action once we have a quorum in the room. This morning we are going to be doing the Health and Human Service Omnibus Bill and Gottwald Bill. As has been the case the last couple days, we're actually working off a Senate file. These bills are quite lengthy. We have not copied Senate files for all members, but if you'd like to review one, they are available from the pages. And Representative Abler, if you would like to start going through your bill, there's a number of amendments here, and when we get to the point where we can take official action, we'll start working on them.
Well, thank you. So we don't have a quorum, so I can't move the bill, but is that right?
That's
correct.
We can discuss
the amendment. I'll discuss the bill generally. I think we'll have ample time to discuss a lot of this tomorrow.
Representative Abler, we do actually now have a quorum, so officially call the meeting to order. Would you like to move the bill?
Yes. Hey, Randy. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 760, the third engrossment to be recommended to pass to the General Register.
All right.
And then I'd like to move to insert the House language.
Okay. So we're considering Senate File 760. Representative Abler moves to insert the House language of House File 927, the first engrossment, into Senate File 760. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. The amendment is approved.
And then, Madam Chair, to get the bill in the order that it'll be discussed today, I have two amendments. There's the A82 amendment. And there's a A84 amendment to the amendment. Do you want me to move those and then discuss the bill as it's amended? Would that be
if that's your preference, Representative Abler, that would be fine.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I'll move the A82 amendment. The 82-1 amendment, Madam.
All right. Representative Speaker. Abler moves the A82-1, and there is an amendment to the amendment.
And, Madam Chair, I'd move the A104 amendment. I'd like to incorporate that into the A82-1 amendment. And then we'll move that, we'll vote on that, and then we'll talk about the bill the way it's amended.
All right. Representative Abler would like to incorporate the A104 amendment into the A82 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and members, this amendment makes dramatic changes in the bill. And adds things that, in terms of getting repealing early MA, makes huge financial changes in the bill, and it's never had a public hearing in the House. Madam Chair, I think, go ahead, but the process that was used for these amendments is terrible.
All right. Representative Abler.
And I know we'll be discussing that more. I respect that. And so it's just for the right now, it's a question of, do you want to put the bill in order and then discuss it or discuss the amendment? It's the same to me. So it's just something that goes clean to just to get the bill in order and then talk about the merits or demerits. So it's up to the committee.
All right. Are there any questions on the A82 amendment as amended? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A82 amendment as amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Amendment's adopted.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And that was, I appreciate the process. I have staff to discuss the changes to the bill if they would like to walk through it. And I can do it, too. Maybe I'll just give the highlights. And it's no secret that that our side of the aisle is not pleased at all with the expansion of the medical assistance program to single adults under 75% of poverty. Not for reasons of a disconcern about the population, but for reasons of actually being able to sustain the services to that population in the way that we have agreed to do. It relies on $4.3 billion of federal money that we don't know is going to come. And reasons that have been discussed at length, both in this committee and in other committees and on the floor. So just to restate that as kind of the obvious. That's the highlight of the amendment. Maybe Mr. Chung could just run through some other highlights of the changes. Many of the changes are favorable. We take the disability waiver spending and put it into 2012 numbers. One of the reasons we'd like a global waiver is to have more flexibility to achieve the advice the department has given us, and we try to accept every bit of advice the department has offered. We had to freeze the waiver spending at March of 2010 levels, which winds up rolling the numbers into the 012 level. And so it's actually freezing at levels beyond today. And so where before I thought we could manage at levels that were even pre this time, the thought that we can manage at levels beyond today and get some savings about a better management is just even more tenable than ever. And there's Mr. Chung can just go through some of the other parts and we can discuss it. And I appreciate members' attention to this topic. And I know it's complex, and the amendment, I don't know how much detail to go into and how high level to stay at, so I'm trying to respect the committee, and we'll stand for any questions later at any level of detail people want to talk about.
Madam Chair, Randy Chen with House Research. I can briefly go through the amendment line by line if that's what you would like. And
all right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Page 1, line 2 of the amendment removes Article 1, Section 10, dealing with child care quality rating and improvement system. Lines 3 to 12 modify GA program eligibility categories, also make some technical or cleanup changes. Lines 13 through page 2, line 19 of the amendment add sections related to the governor's proposal to combine emergency general assistance and EMSA. So this is based on some DHS language. Page 2, line 20 of the amendment is a technical change related to MSA special needs. Lines 21 to 28 of page 2 creates a definition within the group residential housing program for supplementary services. Page 2, line 29 to page 3, line 3 make technical changes related to GRH providers. Page 3, line 4 to 7, these are technical changes to the expedited food support section. Page 3, line 8 to page 5, line 3, this is a technical amendment related to the distribution of child support fees to counties. Page 5, line 4 to line 12, this instructs the Department of Human Services to streamline the Children and Community Services Act reporting requirements. Lines 13 to 17 of page 5, modify a repealer at the end of Article 1, remove some repealers related to GRH supplemental service rates, and add certain repealers related to emergency assistance. Lines 18 to 26 of page 5 deletes two sections regarding food service establishments and waivers and replaces it with some alternative language. Line 27 modifies the definition of limited food establishment, but this provision is then deleted in the A104 amendment. Page 5, line 28 removes the donated dental program from the repealer. Page 5, line 29, this deletes Article 3, which is the Health Board's policy provisions. Page 5, line 30 to page 6, line 2, adds clarifying language for the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. This is also a provision deleted in the A104 amendment. Page 6, line 3, expands the scope of the Low Birth Weight Prevention Initiative to all hospitals. Page 6, line 4, deletes Section 18 of Article 6. This should be disregarded. This section is also reinstated, so disregard page 6, line 4. Then page 6, line 5 to page 7, line 1, this removes references to early medical assistance expansion. Page 7, lines 2 to 22 also relates to the elimination of early MA. Page 7, line 23 provides that stem cell transplants are not covered under emergency MA. Page 7, line 24 deletes some payment reductions for PT and OT assistance that were in the bill. Line 25, page 8, line 21, and some language from the governor's budget bill that allows MA enrollees to pay providers for non-covered MA services. Page 8, line 22 to page 10, line 5 would allow a Courage Center to selectively provide rehab services to new state program enrollees. Page 10, line 6 to line 8 removes language allowing chiropractors to directly operate healthcare homes. Line 9 delays by 1 year the date by which F28s, federally qualified health centers can be deemed as healthcare homes. Page 10, line 10, this reduces the reduction in MRC funding that comes out of the PMAP capitation rate. Page 10, lines 11 to 31 removes language under which outpatient prescription drugs were provided through a prescription drug pool. This is related to the bill's reinstatement of the modified GMC program. Page 10, line 32, basically going down to page 15, line 17, this is the reinstatement of the modified GMC program and the CCDS system. Then page 15, line 18 to 29, this makes adults without children with incomes under 75% of poverty ineligible for Minnesota care, so this group would move to GMC. Page 15, line 30 to page 18, line 19, this modifies healthcare access fund transfer from 2010 to recapture some money. Page 18, line 20 to line 27 directs the department to refer early MA enrollees to GAMC. Let's see. Lines 28 to page 19, line 3 would reinstate the modified GMC program. Page 19, line 4 deletes a contingent reinstatement of GAMC. Page 19, line 5 to line 8 deletes a contingent repealer of MA early expansion and substitutes sort of a permanent non-contingent repealer. Page 19, line 9 removes Article 7, Section 3, which are ICFDD moratorium exceptions. Page 19, lines 10 to 13 are technical changes to the MAEPD premium increase. Lines 14 to page 20, line 25, these are technical and clarifying changes to the self-directed supports option. Page 20, line 26, removes Article 7, Section 11, which deals with PCA-covered services. Line 27 removes a provision related to home and community-based attendance services and supports. Page 20, line 28 to page 21, line 22, these are technical and clarifying changes to assessment and support planning. Page 21, lines 23 to 26 are more technical and clarifying changes. The same with lines, I guess going to page 22, line 3, these are more technical changes. Page 22, lines 4 to 11 are technical changes to the Region 10 language in the bill. Line 12 removes a section dealing with the nursing facility rate reduction for low-needs residents. Line 13 removes some definitions related to a Mary T. proposal. Lines 14 to 20 remove language and make a technical change related to coordinated service and support plans. Lines 21 to 22 remove a direction to the commissioner related to community first choice option. Lines 23 to 25 clarify direction to the commissioner related to a federal waiver amendment. Line 26 removes a direction to the commissioner related to PCA services. Lines 27 through 29 are sort of technical changes. Page 22, line 30 to page 23, line 2, delete language related to the White Earth pilot project. Page 22, lines 3 to page 23, line 6 also relate to the White Earth ban. Page 23, line 7 deletes a section of case management appeals. Page 23, line 8 to page 25, line 32 adds Representative Lanning's House File 364, which relates to detox services. Line 32 changes the county seer for the sex offender program. Lines 33 to page 26, line 7 deletes language requiring closure of all community behavioral health hospitals requires only the closure of Wilmer. Page 28, lines 14 to 19, it's a rider regarding adoption assistance. Lines 9 to 15 are base funding from the general fund for the CALS program. Lines 9 to 14 provide funding for the reinstated GMC program. Lines 19 to page 27, line 5, remove the Region 10 quality assurance and waiver caps riders. Page 27, line 6 to page 28, line 11, require DHS to contract with a vendor to manage the MA fee-for-service payment freeze and make some related changes. Lines 12 to 13, remove a rider related to child care quality rating and improvement. Lines 20 to 25, add a new rider related to Region 10. Lines 26 to page 29, line 8, add a new rider related to a federal grant recently received by DHS. And finally, page 29, lines 16 to 17, modifier related to DD acuity to match the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chung. Members, are there any questions at this time? Otherwise, we go to the other amendments. All right. Next amendment we have is Amendment A93. Representative Downey, I believe this one is yours. All right, we will not be considering the A93 amendment. The A103 amendment, Representative Kiffmeyer, is that your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. So we're on A103 at this time?
Yes, we are. If you'd okay. like to move that.
Yes, I would like to move the H0927A103 amendment to, I believe, the, it still is, Madam Chair, to the House language. Do I need to change it since we substituted in the Senate bill?
Representative Kiffmeyer, you are still amending the House language, which has been inserted into the Senate file, so I think you're amendments properly drafted.
Okay, good. I expected so, but thank you very much. Madam Chair, this is a study of enrolled provider networks, a proposal that allows the Commissioner of Human Services to present recommendations to the legislature, and it gives some broad outlines of what an enrolled provider network would be including. And so, Madam Chair, that is my amendment.
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, this was discussed in the committee and it was taken out for more work. It's had more work, and I think it makes it look good grounds for more discussion in the conference time, and I would hope members can support it.
Alrighty, are there any questions on the A103 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The 103 amendment is adopted. The next amendment that we have is the 260 amendment. We're not sure who provided that to the committee. I have Representative Fritz a name for this, but she's not on the committee, so does anybody want to claim it? All righty.
Well, Madam Chair, was someone to offer that? I was willing to take it if somebody wanted to offer it. It seems like it's...
I'll
offer it.
So, but they have to be able to describe what it does if they're going to offer it.
Now the hands go back down.
Reps on healthy might be it. Madam Chair.
Representative Abler. First of all, Representative Carlson moves the 260 amendment. Representative Abler.
Let me describe the Carlson amendment, Madam Chair. Actually, there's a program. This is actually a real positive thing. Putting a social worker to coordinate the care of some of these high-cost frequent flyers, as it were, who find themselves in the emergency room quite often. Hennepin County, HDMC regions, and other of the CCDS programs found this to be a very successful addition. I think Representative Fritz has gone to do some more work on actually making this work. There's a small savings in the bill for this. This may actually increase some administrative savings, I'm told. It doesn't save any great deal of money, but it's a real positive way to coordinate the care of these the people that find themselves needing some coordination that are already they're already engaged in other county services. They're known to the agencies, and they can better help them get the right amount of care and actually get better outcomes. So it's I would suggest members support this amendment.
Representative. Right, thank you. Are there any questions on the 260 amendment? Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, I just want to confirm with the author. This helps make this a bipartisan bill. Is that correct?
Representative Abel.
Thanks. Well, actually, that's why I expect broad support on final passage with this amendment. There are a few of the elements in the bill that are have been brought by both sides of the aisle. Representative Huntley had a there's a piece in here about letting some people keep some money as they move out of the Teen Challenge and other kinds of programs. Representative Thiessen has one about spousal shares. There's the Fritz InReach and one or two others that made sense. And so, yeah, I expect a rousing vote as we leave the committee, Representative Westrom. So.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments on the 260 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. 260 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair,
just Representative Abler.
To the bill now, just to summarize, and I'm sure there'll be other discussion. Just to point out what the amendment did, and we have never faced a challenge the likes of what we have now. And if you read the paper, every day there's something that gets our attention. Gas went up 20 cents yesterday, you know? The forecast that we were given in this committee just a little over a month ago said that oil would be below $100 till 2013. It spiked to 109 or something that on Tuesday after the bill, the report came out on Monday. No one foresaw Japan. We're actually having some rainwater that's got some radiation in it now in St. Paul, which is interesting. Nobody foresaw that. Nobody foresaw Libya. And so this bill has presented a unique set of challenges, and in a political environment where we're arguing about how much revenue we can get, the quicker we can get that discussion going, the better, which is part of the reason for this bill moving so rapidly. In the amendment that we adopted, the hospital rate cut went away. That was 7.04%. The physical therapist, occupational therapist rate changes were taken out. Teen Challenge was given some enhanced rates for some of their beds that didn't get one before. A highly successful program. The PA1 level of nursing home services reduction was taken out. Single bed was taken out earlier. There was a move on my part just to create discussion about closing the CBHHs statewide, which I didn't really want to do. I did it in the second year just to create a dialogue. I was scaring too many people working there, and so that's out of the bill. But so we are just faced with a challenge like we've never seen before. I fully expect at the end of the day the target for this bill coming at the end game is going to be not far off the range of this target. And that gives me pause. And how do we manage around that without causing harm to the people we care the most about? There's an editorial in today's paper by a man from the Carlson administration saying that when they tried to redesign government, everybody said, yeah, I want my own private room, as it were, in his analogy about a house. And it's a fascinating editorial. I'm able to bring it to the floor tomorrow. Everybody wants to do some changes, but as long as it doesn't touch them or the people they represent or their particular client or their advocate, the group they advocate for, the Courage Center said it very well in a letter they sent to me just yesterday. They're not officially endorsing the bill. I don't know what their position on the bill even is. But they said we have to do things differently and yet care about the people we care so much about, or we are not going to be able to sustain this. And just to bring out my hand puppets, Madam Chair, spending is here, revenue's there, and we do all kinds of gyrations every cycle to find a way to not have to address services we're dishing out to people we care about. And we ran out of stimulus money. Maybe we can do it. We can backfill one more time with some tax increases. I don't think that's tenable. I'm not sure they can even pass. And when the governor did have $4.1 billion of new revenue, he reduced this spending by $800 million. And so if people think that this area is going to be left out, if we can find some amount of revenue, I think that they need to be alert to the fact that that's not realistic. And the governor is known to be a compassionate man. And caring for people. And if the budget he had with the money where we tax the rich, like the rally was yesterday, and I understand why people say that, and I'm not here to debate that so much, just to give the context of it. If he did $800 million in reductions, and this bill, then there has to be an area of some changes. The target on this bill is $1.88 billion from all funds, $50 million beyond what the Senate target is in terms of reductions. There's $230 million in healthcare access fund and $1.65 billion in general fund. So those are just my summary comments, and I'm willing to take any number of questions about anything at this point.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, you're booking, if I read this right, on the Medicaid waiver, global waiver, $300 million. Do you have a fiscal note on that from the Department of Management and Budget?
Maybe
Representative Abler.
Maybe I'll have Mr. Walls come down and talk about how we balance the finances.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Walls, if you'll state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, John Walls, House Fiscal Staff. Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, the provision which you are speaking to, the Medicaid global waiver, the $300 million has not received a fiscal note from the department. The department is has not provided any guidance to me other than that they're not sure that this waiver will be achieved. However, the waiver language is backed up by giving the department discretion to cut Medicaid rates to providers to achieve the $300 million or up to the $300 in the absence of savings that may be gained from receiving a waiver from the federal government and making changes to the Medicaid system.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, So if we don't get the waiver, then we'll just say to the Commissioner of Human Services, you figure out how to do this?
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, that is currently what the language proposes.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Abler, you know, I thought it was the legislator's job to pass a budget bill that told how the money was supposed to be spent. And so, Mr. Abler, as long as John Walls is there, you're booking $271 million in savings from the PMAP managed care rate reduction of 12%. Do we have a fiscal note on that?
Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, the managed care reforms that you see on the spreadsheet are a combination of three items, two of which were fiscal noted for the governor's bill, and those are a part of the number you see reflected. The 12% reduction was calculated from a spreadsheet provided to me by the department, which had an input cell that you could input a percentage and it would put out the correct number that would be reflected by that rate cut. It's my understanding that the department does not dispute the calculation of that number.
Representative
and, Madam Chair and Mr. Walzer, Representative Abler, the fee-for-service rate reduction 5.5%. You're booking $179 million in savings. Is there a fiscal note on that one?
Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, I don't know that the rate cut that you're speaking to, or that, excuse me, the cut to fee-for-service is the that 5.5% is a correct reflection. It is roughly 10% to fee-for-service in the second year. It is somewhere around 5% in the first year, I believe. Madam Chair and Representative Huntley, I had some conversations with the department to find out what the correct representation for fee-for-service was in that population. We had some conversations back and forth to arrive at that. The chair directed a reduction to that amount with specifics to the department to try to achieve savings through cutting, reducing usage by high-cost providers and some other things. But ultimately, this proposal is backed up with a similar direction to the department to reduce rates to Medicaid providers to achieve the savings if the other methods are not successful.
Madam Chair and members, what we're doing is, again in this item is saying, Commissioner, you figure it out. We're not smart enough in the House of Representatives to figure out what your budget ought to be. I think that's it probably for Mr. Walls, but for Mr. Representative Abler, I would like to talk about the repeal of early MA.
Yes.
And my understanding is for the next biennium, currently on early MA, we are paying, would cost us about $853 million of general fund money.
I think that's closer.
Representative Abler.
I'll accept your number. Yeah.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
And Representative Abler, that's going down to about $400 million roughly.
That's correct,
Representative
Chair,
Abler.
Representative Huntley.
And will that $400 million get a federal match?
Representative
My understanding it requires a waiver, which we would be very unlikely that we would get.
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, my understanding is this repeals the early MA that we opted into and were unopting out of. is that English syntax, Madam Chair? Anyway, that we're backing out of, anyway. And so what it attempts to do is to recreate some of the successes that we have actually walked away from in the when the governor enrolled us in early MA. There were some very successful stories about how they coordinated care for these, much like the InReach program, only on a broader scale. And some of the folks who had spent multiple times in the emergency room found by if they would pay attention to the other elements of their life that they would not go so much. Hennepin County and regions reported savings of 25% or better in those populations. And so what this bill does is not just recreate what we had, but it actually creates sites across the state using whatever hospital would join, as well as all the FQHCs, the community health clinic sites. There's 55 of those statewide. Every town has one pretty much. Across the state, they're peppered across the state compared to the problem before. They had four in the metro, and the talking with the department about this, a lot of it's secondhand through staff. But there's about 90 some thousand people that are affected by this. 92,000, I think, is the number I understand. And this population, when they were enrolled, we were being charged. They go into managed care pretty soon. And we're being charged for that whether they go or not. And we, if you just remember the discussions from yesterday about what's the right amount of profit for an HMO to have and all that, I think that by directly managing these people better that we can actually get a better value. And it's not out of inhumanity. It's about recognizing our incapacity to fund some of the programs that we want to do. And it really comes down to a choice of disability services for people in waivers versus unmanaged care for people who don't use services very carefully. And so I believe that the $400 million will serve these individuals quite well, especially when it's spread out to the sites. I think the error of our compromise last year and a half ago, whenever it was, on the CCDS GAMC fix model was in putting it hospital-based and not on the frontline clinic-based. And I think had we done that, we could add a little bit more money, as this bill does, and actually seen it work. So that's the general summary of it. And it's
Representative Huntley.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, you did not answer my question. Do we get a federal match in at $400 million?
I'm sorry.
Representative Abler.
Sorry. I wasn't dodging. I just forgot. I don't believe so. We do get some DSH money, though, that is worth something, and I don't remember that. That's actually shown, I think, in the spreadsheet as income.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and members, currently we were budgeted to spend $853 million of general fund money on this population. That would have been matched by $853 million federal money. So what we're doing to our providers here is giving them a cut from, they were getting $1.7 billion to take care of these very sick people. They're going to get $400 million. So that's a $1.3 billion cut to our health care providers, be they hospitals, clinics, physicians, nurses, a $1.3 billion cut to their providers. And, Madam Chair, what do you think, and members, what are those hospitals going to do? Some will go out of business because of this cut. And, Madam Chair, this is a huge change in this bill. There really has not been a public hearing, and I know there are people in the audience that would like to testify, and I know that usually does not happen in this committee. But for such a huge change, I think we ought to see if there's people who wish to comment on various parts of this bill as it's amended today.
All right. Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also hope that we will get some testimony because this is such a significant amendment, such a significant change. Two things. One, I know, Representative Abler, that the quality rating system funds and language were pulled out of the bill. They were controversial because they targeted centers only. But I want to express my disappointment at that. The Early Childhood Caucus had made that a high priority. As you know, it's about the rating of child care, and really it's about closing the achievement gap. You know, our young kids are a lot of them, some are in preschool, but a lot of them are in child care, and a way of doing the rating system helps to increase the quality of what happens in our child cares and where our young kids are. Secondly, I want to talk a little bit more about Representative Huntley's point about delegating the authority of the legislature to the commissioners when we come up short on funds, potentially. We talked about this in committee. We talked about it last night in state government. We're seeing this in a lot of our bills throughout the legislature. Specifically, we have concerns about this because it is the $300 million global waiver. If that comes in short, we have no idea how short that could come in, and then asking the commissioner to make that decision when we're elected to do the budget. That's our job during this session, is to complete that. And I have a letter from Governor Dayton. It's actually his vetoed letter on House File 130. We all will remember that was the piece of legislation we took up early and had to do with all the cuts that had been made. In that, he talks about undocumented assumptions and amounts that are not yet encumbered. And in it, he says, instead, you would abdicate your responsibility to make those difficult spending choices and your power to determine those cuts to an appointed official of the executive department, the same thing that this bill does. That is both inappropriate and unconstitutional. So we have the governor's letter that talks about this type of accounting being unconstitutional, about delegating the authority to the executive department or to the commissioner. I think it brings up serious concerns about the bill. And Madam Chair, we've had this discussion back and forth about if you're certifying the bills as they come through Ways and Means, but Representative Averill, it seems really hard to certify a bill on an amount, as the John Wall said, and as we know, we don't know if that's going to come in or not.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, let me explain just so people understand what this language in this bill does and doesn't do. I fully expect that we can get a waiver. I fully expect that by putting pressure on providers and managing our waiver programs better, we can extract the savings. And I have backed them up with outcomes that I hate. I do not want to cut anybody's rates. And I'll tell you what I've learned. I've never been in a real chair before, so this has been quite a trip. I find that when I put language in a bill and it's moving, people talk to me. And what you saw in the amendments today took 29 pages to deal with the fixes from what people told me would work better. Some things that wouldn't work at all. Department says, you know, we just can never do this, so we put it off to 2014. And so to make these projects work. But I will tell you, if providers know that in 12 months or 18 months, they're going to experience a rate cut that's dramatic. They're going to be interested in helping police their own and finding ways to do business more effectively. The usual way you balance a bill like this is to do, all I have to do is cut rates 10-15%, reduce every child care expenditure that we don't have to do, kill GRH and GA, and repeal single adult anything, not even cover them, and I won't have to do any more cutting. I can leave hospitals intact and so on. But that's not an outcome anybody would like. And so the times are different. And so my leadership on this, while I'm pressing people's comfort zones, I respect that highly. But we have to get everybody to think a little differently. That a person who's entitled to services doesn't need to get everything they could possibly be entitled to because it might not be beneficial. In this bill, we suggest that people get six-month reevaluations on waivers to see if indeed they can become more independent and have a better life. That's a model that actually works at Mary T. in my old district before redistricting happened. They actually do that, and they have people that go from high levels of dependence to only needing 4 hours of independent living services a week in some of their programming. It's time for those kinds of changes to think about that, and so there's an informal administrative conference in the bill, which there's language that we couldn't get worked out for today that would be on the floor to make it work better. Where if the person doesn't like their award of services, rather than go to a hearing with a judge, they'll actually have an informal conference at their local county with the people who understand the case. And they'll say, how about trying this out? You're on a path to become more independent. And so rather than denying services to people who really need them, the people who could do without and could be moved to a better path are going to be getting a little bit less. I'm convinced if you add up those little bit lesses that they're worth 10 or 15%. As I get all kinds of comments from people now that come to my email box that never came before, workers in the departments, and staff who watch parents being given cell phones and plasma TVs and which is the exception, but it shouldn't be happening at all. Spending down their accounts in December because they have money left. Really? When there's 4,000 people not on a waiver that are gonna, the mother's gonna die and that child's gonna be 55 years old and be left by himself? Really? Is that what we want to do? And so if we balance the people's needs against how we do our services and push everyone to do something differently, we can actually lower the spending trajectory and actually serve people with better outcomes. That's what I seek. And by putting and if you look at the bills we've done, we've always had the rate cuts up front, 4.5%, the governor even did in his bill, and he's a nice man. But that would have harmed the services greatly to people who are getting $9.50 an hour. They would have had to quit, maybe. And so, can we do it better? I hope so. If we fail, all we do is doing stuff like we ever did before. And there's a legislative session that comes between now and then, if you recall. And so, would I let the department go after services like this? Not likely. But I have to back it up with real money because I can't be having a bill that's fake. Every penny in this bill, I'm willing to take the responsibility for being the guy who cut their rates by large amounts if it doesn't work. But that same kind of pressure goes against the advocates and the staff and the vendors and the department because they don't want to see that happen either. And so if we don't succeed in these measures, you will see just what you predicted. But I perish that thought, and so it's with respect that I bring this, and not to be clever, mostly out of terror. Because I don't know if the budget's going to be as good as this budget next year. I don't know if the revenues we hope that will come are going to still be there when Toyota's closing, I think, 25 plants temporarily because they're out of parts because of the tsunami. We have to look at the big picture here and look at our human service and our compassion for the injured and the sick. In Minnesota, we are a high compassionate state. Compassion isn't meaning giving people everything they could consume, but helping people get what they need to become to a better place. Some people will forever need a high level of services to be alive. Nobody's changed in this bill at that level. But if you can become more independent and be given services to drive you to a more independent place, this bill pushes for that. And that's how you save the money. And so I'll accept anybody's comments about it, but that's my effort behind it. And so, Representative Slawick, just so you know.
Representative Slawick.
Just a follow-up. Is good intentions are good and well, but you have one of the largest areas of the state budget, and it is an extremely serious matter, and it has to be balanced. And it's hard to make cuts, and it's hard to be the chair. But it is our job as legislator to make those cuts and to make the bill balance. The question about the waiver, you know, we looked at doing a waiver on some people did, for scholarships for early childhood, and the first step is talking to the congressional delegation and seeing if they're open to that. Have you talked to the congressional delegation? Are they interested in waivers and going to help you push that through?
Representative Abler.
I have not discussed that with our two senators, or I have talked with Congressman Bachman a little bit about some changes there, but not in a lot of detail. I read in yesterday's or today's paper that Representative Ryan is working on his proposal is going to include some block grants to states, which is another version of this very thing. And I think as the world of compromise goes on in Washington, I think that my waiver idea, which is not unique to me, Rhode Island has one, New Jersey just got one, and others are applying for them, is going to be kind of come the popular alternative to block grants in terms of a de facto block grant. I'm not so, my mom's calling me again. I'm on TV, Mom. I'll predict that this is going to gain traction, especially as you look at the flexibility we're going to want to have, and if you know, and that's, I think it's real, and I think it can happen.
Madam Chair,
Representative Slaw.
Last follow up is I encourage you to talk to the congressional delegation if you're going to get a federal waiver. That's really one of the first steps you should be doing. Are you really confident that this federal waiver will come in by May 23rd. Let's see what it's the beginning of April here. So in 8 months, the federal government's going to approve $300 million to be block granted, and we're going to, well, I guess we'd have to be before that because we'd have to pass that through this session and get it through the budget by then. You're confident that'll happen?
Representative Slavik, actually it's booked in the second year of the biennium. So I allowed for time, this is what I would expect. The governor actually moved heaven and earth to do the impossible. Early MA expansion could not happen until October 1st. Mr. Osberg was convinced of that, and I believe he was true. So the governor wanted it done by March 1st, and so he made it happen. He pointed his finger at the department and said, Department, make it so. And the commissioner and the staff quit doing everything else, and they made it so. I believe if the governor becomes persuaded that this is a good idea, he'll point his finger at the department and say, Department, make it so. He actually has a career in Washington before this. He knows Ms. Sebelius. He knows a lot of the senators out there. He has strong connections to the Obama administration. And so that becomes an asset in this case. And so worst case, a lot of us on the committee come back in the summer or whatever and work out a project. And worst of all cases, we come back for a day and pass a... You know, we do groundbreaking work and we celebrate one day special session and do this thing, or we wait till next year. It's highly reasonable that this can be done. The department, when waivers come, has a lot of flexibility in putting them together. So I'm really convinced that this could happen, and I think if we want the flexibility to serve the people how we know how to do it better here, then that's what should happen. I wouldn't be so confident if I represented Mississippi or somewhere else.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a quick editorial. You know, we've heard the word compassion, but in my worldview, you know, compassion's when you take money out of your own pocket, all right, and provide to the needy. That's not what we're doing here, all right? And to use the word compassion for what we're doing here, I think, is a little misguided. But we're also hearing the word cut a lot, and Representative Abor, I just want to cut to the chase here, all right? The other day, we redid our budget targets, and so I just want to walk through a few numbers with you, all right? As I look at FY 10 and 11 from our House Targets budget spreadsheet, it says that from the general fund, we spent approximately $10.17 billion in this issue area. Would you agree with that number?
Yes, I would.
All right. Representative, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abor, that $10.17 billion, does that include about $1.63 billion of federal stimulus dollars?
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, yes.
Madam Chair?
Representative Biskin.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Abor, I'll just finish this then and ask me if I am accurate or not, all right? If I take out the $1.63 billion of federal stimulus money, all right, that the federal government went into debt to get, I get about $8.55 billion was what we expected the state taxpayers of the state of Minnesota to contribute to this funding area. And now I see that your target is $10.69 billion, and your bill does meet that target. Representative Abor, is it fair to say that the compassionate people of the state of Minnesota are being asked to pony up an extra $2.141 billion in this budget area in the next biennium?
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, no. Those same compassionate, generous taxpayers sent that same $1.696 billion to the federal government that they sent back to us. And so, if you in our own discussions, we talk about the cost factor of federal funding. It goes there, and we get back something. And so the shrinkage. probably they had to send $2 billion to Washington. So maybe they're getting a bargain, Representative Biskin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Abor. That would only presuppose, of course, that the federal government is not in deficit spending, and we know they are. So that logic doesn't hold. The fact is that this bill is asking the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota to pony up an extra $2.141 billion in this budget area. There's no getting around that. And for anyone to say that we are not being compassionate as taxpayers, that we don't care, that this is draconian and this is huge cuts, I think is to say that the taxpayers of Minnesota must go even further than this. And I just can't see how we can do that and still provide for the economic health of this state.
Representative Bissons.
Representative Abler.
And we can discuss this some more, but in the accounting of this budget, that the money that 1.6, you know this already, I'll just repeat it for the sake of people who might be listening, that was supplanted money we would have otherwise spent. And so the whole budget solution had the element of this federal money which I always determined as falling from the sky, and is based on borrowed money. And I was concerned about that, and that would have been a good time to do some reform. That didn't happen at the time, and so that's why I'm trying to dig at the forecast and reduce it by amount no one has ever done before. And so, you know, I appreciate it doesn't go as far as you'd like, but I think it's a massive step in the direction to sustainability. And so I see this as a positive balance toward those goals.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I wanted to talk a little bit about the quality ratings. I was one of, I think, two Democrats on the House floor that actually voted to take this out of the education bill. But I did that with full knowledge that it was in this bill. And this is where I always have thought quality rating and the scholarship should be funded, because I believe they should apply to child care and not to the education programs. But so I just want to say that I'm very distressed now that they're being taken out of here as well. There's very few topics that we've had as much bipartisan work on and agreement and outside experts and research and verification from the university economists and so forth as we have on early childhood, but that we've done as virtually nothing about. I think it's amazing. So I just have to say that about taking quality ratings out of this bill. Secondly, I strongly agree that we should have testimony. It sounds like Representative Abler's had a lot of conversation with some of these amendments from advocates desperate to make things better in the face of these cuts, but the rest of the people on the committee, not to mention this committee, haven't heard that, or maybe the others in the room haven't heard what the others have said. So I would urge and implore the chair to entertain the testimony that Chair Huntley and others have asked for. And then third, I strongly also urge us to keep this bill in this committee until we have the fiscal notes. I just am astounded that we would, I mean, if we didn't have a fiscal note on, you know, $30 million, I would be astounded at that, that we didn't nail that down before it went out of this committee. But when I'm totaling up the hundreds of millions of dollars that we don't have fiscal notes on, and we heard that from Mr. Walsh, I can't express my my shock and amazement enough that the Ways and Means Committee of the House of Representatives could even think of it, of passing along a bill with this many question marks and about if it's balanced or not. And I, Madam Chair, wouldn't, if I were you, want to put my name to this. It's from what Representative Carlson said last night. It's actually you and not us that's taking the fault for this. And I wouldn't want to be in your shoes saying that, certifying this bill. That's for sure. So I would urge us to hear the testimony and then lay it over until we actually get the fiscal notes. And I think it's a matter of courage to if you're going to make cuts and you don't want to raise taxes, then you certainly should have the courage to spell out what you're doing and not pass the buck on to the agencies. If they came with bills with big gaps like this in it, we would, I think, send it back to them and ask for filling in the blank. And but for us now to do the same thing, I think, is unconscionable. So I hope we will hear things and then lay it over until we have fiscal notes. And then I think we're going to be in real trouble about even passing this bill, because the fiscal notes, I think, are going to show the bill is nowhere close to being done.
And Representative Greiling, I would be happy to take some testimony. I'm trying to get through the questions of the committee members. We're time constrained here as well, so as time allows. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have a couple, three questions. The first one, if Representative Abler could tell us, I'm looking at the House budget resolution that was amended last night, that you were to come up with an additional $20 million. And how did you handle that $20 million in additional cuts?
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, it wasn't done specifically. It was the fiscal notes actually had been evolving over the course of the last month or so. And so it was just part of the global target. There's, you can't point at one thing and this is what the $20 million came from. I'm not able to answer the question because it wasn't a specific number that we extracted from something.
So you,
Representative Carlson.
You just took it off the bottom line? It's global, that doesn't give us much information.
Well, I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example of what I couldn't do. I was hoping to add back. We accepted the governor's initial proposal of reducing services in Minnesota Care to individuals above 200% of poverty. I was hoping to add some money back into that. I was unable to do that with the new target. As one example, I was trying to do some other ways to, you know, when you try to buy back certain things, you've had to do that was. But the, I was at least I was comfortable that the governor had chosen that number, and those people have some means. So, but beyond that, there's no. That's only an example. I don't know how much I would have been able to do that anyway. But that's just an example.
Representative
Madam
Carlson.
Chair, then I guess that $20 million came from somewhere. I'm not sure. I've been involved with fiscal committees, and when you're dealing with $20 million, I assume that comes from somewhere that could conceivably be somehow identified, but be it as it may. I'd like to go back to the fiscal note question. If you'll recall, we spent some time on that last night, and it was identified that in the bill that was passed last night, there was about $133 million that netted out at $98 million, according to the author of the bill, in reduced expenditures or revenue raising, actually, that did not have a fiscal note. So that was $133 million. Now, earlier testimony identified in this bill approximately $750 million. Where there's not a fiscal note attached. Staff testified that the $271 million that was referenced in there was agreement on the number, but he didn't say there was a fiscal note, which is the official record when we're trying to balance bills. But my question of you then, Representative Abler, is are there any other areas in the bill beyond those three where you're booking savings that do not have a fiscal note?
Representative Abler.
To your first question, just remember it's something else. Mr. Walls would give me a new spreadsheet every two or three days and say, where are we at now? So that's kind of how we did that. So that's why I couldn't answer the specific question. The fiscal note question, Mr. Walls shook his head no. But those are the, you've listed the areas.
Those are the three, the $750 million, Madam Chair. You know, that's an alarming number when we talk about fiscal notes, especially when those of us that have been involved with finance committees have fiscal notes on very modest expenditures, let alone three-quarters of $1 billion in this bill and another $133 million last night. So, you know, we've got what I would point out then, two bills that are coming before us last night and today that are out of balance and cannot be certified as being in balance, although that's a decision, Madam Chair, that apparently under the House rule you alone make, as it does say the chair, not the committee. The other point I want to make, the delegation of authority, and we talked a little bit about that last night. I referenced a federal court case involving the federal government where it was found to be unconstitutional for a legislative body, in that case Congress, to delegate basically legislative decisions to the administrative branch. We had a court case here in Minnesota dealing with unallotment, and the point that was made was that you basically can't create your own emergency, that when the legislature is in session, you have a responsibility to put forth a budget that's balanced, and the language that you have that shifts that responsibility, if we don't get a waiver to the administrative branch while we're still in session, I would say the court has ruled rather clearly on that question, because it is a form of unallotment. And I would say that, as earlier comments were made by Representative Slawik, that that's clearly, if you look at that case, unconstitutional. Madam Chair, I could raise some other questions, but you do want to get some testimony in per the request of several members. I really think that this bill, although it'll be helpful to have testimony here, really should be re-referred to the Ways and Means, or not the Ways and Means Committee, but the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, where the members there are truly the ones that have developed the expertise that we're going to be on a very short learning curve here this morning, especially when I look at the Abler Amendment that had 12 major changes and a 13th that was described as miscellaneous and relatively minor changes, whatever that means in a bill of this magnitude. So at any rate, 12 substantive changes, and we're going to try to get in a few minutes testimony on 12 substantive changes on an amendment that was brought up here this morning. I mean, I just think that's highly out of order for a committee like this to be dealing with that kind of a change without the Finance Committee dealing with it. And Madam Chair, I may a little bit later after the testimony want to make a motion to re-refer this to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Unfortunately, that motion didn't prevail on the House floor yesterday, but as we're learning here this morning, I think it's even more apparent that this does have to be re-referred, or should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Recognizing we're waiting for testimony, I'll be very brief. Representative Abler, you've spoken quite a bit about reform and moving people toward independence, and yet your bill eliminates the funding for the statewide health improvement program, one of our most innovative approaches to reform and creating a better approach to health care throughout our state. I'm wondering if you could justify that elimination.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Reinhart. It's not for lack of interest in the program. It was funded with one-time money. And so this bill does not add any money beyond that, just to make you feel a little more comfortable. I don't know if you're comfortable or not, but the local grants that go to the public health agencies and the counties are not changed. And the logic of, just to piggyback on that, the logic of leaving the county grants intact was to give the counties the ability to manage some of these waiver cases and do their services in a more flexible way. I think to reduce those grants, the CCSA grants, which you recall had quite a bit of discussion, this bill doesn't reduce that by a penny, which was great controversy. And I told you I didn't like it, and I didn't like it then, and I like it the way it is now with fully intact. The counties are our primary source of implementation of health care for the people we serve. And so I want to leave that system intact. In fact, it becomes much more flexible under this bill. And they'll have the ability to make some local decisions and serve their people better, even in the face of some diminished revenues. But flexibility often gives you more freedom to do better work. So that answers your question.
All righty. Any additional questions by committee members? All right, in order to kind of get a roadmap here, we will take testimony on the amendment that was adopted by the committee, the A82 amendment. I would like members of the audience to raise your hand if you would like to testify on the A82 amendment so that I might be able to figure out a time frame here for testifiers. All righty. It looks like we have time to accommodate those requests. If you'd like to step to the podium, state your name for the record, and provide brief comment on the A82 amendment. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dave Renner, representing the Minnesota Medical Association. First, I want to say I understand the difficulty you all have and the difficulty we have making decisions. We have worked closely with Chair Aber and hope to continue to work with him in the future. The main issue I want to talk on is the early adoption in Minnesota of the Medicaid, the medical assistance program. This is something the Medical Association strongly supports. This is something that individuals below 75% of poverty, just because they no longer have coverage doesn't mean they're not going to need care. And that care is continued to be provided by physicians, hospitals, clinics, and others. And those costs don't go away. With the early adoption, for the first time, federal government, we would argue, has stepped forward and expanded the Medicaid program to what it should cover. And that's anybody based on income, not just based on other categorical criteria. So we would strongly oppose the amendment to step away from the early adoption. We would encourage you to continue to use the federal money that's provided to states and continue to provide coverage through the Medicaid program for these populations.
Thank you, Mr. Renner.
I'd be happy to answer questions.
Next.
You're great.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Krinke, if you'll state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. My comments are similar to Mr. Renner's, but because of the addition of the CCDS language, I think I need to provide a few additional comments, if I may. As Mr. Renner noted, Medicaid has been in place since 1965. It has covered low-income individuals. All of this population below 75% of the federal poverty guidelines makes less than $8,000 a year. The only difference now is that we will cover childless individuals, individuals who do not have a child under the age of 21. So if you think about this, an individual on Medicaid may be in the Medicaid program, they have a child that is age 20, their child turns 21, and they lose their coverage in the Medicaid program. Think how disruptive that is to an individual. So I just want going to go for the record. This is now able to cover individuals without children under the age of 21. The second thing to point out is that the early Medicaid program is good for our state finances, it's good for our provider finances, but most important, it's good for the patients. It is a full array of benefits. It includes mental health coverage, it includes dental coverage, and yes, Representative Abler, it includes chiropractic coverage. So people need to understand that this CCDS program was in essence a pilot program that targeted a few individuals in the GAMC program. It was about 15,000 individuals. What Representative Abler is doing in this bill now is taking 90,000 individuals and trying to squeeze them into a program that operated for the last 6 months at four hospitals. So I just don't think we can do the comparison to the previous CCDS program. So just for the record, once again, the Hospital Association strongly supports statewide program like the Medicaid early enrollment is, and we urge you to reconsider this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krenke. Representative Westrom, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, Ms. Krenke, and maybe to the prior witness, but I think you're on the same page. Are we getting a message from your organization that they support or embrace Obamacare as early MA as part of that total package? Is that a clear or a correct deduction?
Ms. Krenke.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the American Hospital Association did support much of the federal health care reform legislation. The Minnesota Hospital Association came out in favor of portions of it, including this early Medicaid enrollment. Obviously, if you have a 3,000-page bill, there are things in the bill that you like and things that you don't like. For the committee, on the record, there are significant cuts to hospitals and their Medicare payments in the federal health care reform bill. So I would like to point out that the cuts are moving forward on hospitals in the federal health care reform bill, and we would certainly like to keep the early Medicaid in place.
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, Ms. Krenke, I assume your organization is also aware that there have been some courts that have struck the bill down as unconstitutional. Does that change your level of support if that bill is unconstitutional in its entirety, and there is not a severability clause, so you don't get to pick and choose. You either take it all or you abide or you follow the Constitution and you don't take it all. Does that affect your support of it at all?
Ms. Krenke, a question from the Chair of the Civil Law Committee.
If I may, Madam Chair, I think it's important for the committee to understand that Minnesota has been providing coverage for this population long before the federal health care reform bill passed. We covered this population in the Minnesota Care Program and in the GAMC program with state dollars only. So even if we just have a two-year window in order to help us through this budget crisis with some federal monies, even if the federal government says it's going to remain a 50-50 partnership rather than picking up the whole cost of the program, we were already covering these individuals.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Krenke, do you think the state of Minnesota can afford both Minnesota Care and all the safety net that we provide for these individuals today before early MA and early MA both? Is that possible in your mind?
Ms. Krenke.
Madam Chair and Representative Gunther, like I said, this program was primarily supported with the provider tax in Minnesota Care and the GAMC program, which was state funded. So we have been doing this for some time, and I answer the question, yes, I believe this is a priority, and given that the provider tax is still in place, we are still paying for coverage of much of this population, I think the answer is yes.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Krenke, I don't sit on Health and Human Services, so could you just
microphone.
Okay. I don't sit on Health and Human Services, so you could just tell me exactly who you represent, what the group is, and I have a follow-up.
Ms. Krenke.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I am employed by the Minnesota Hospital Association, and every single hospital in the state but one proprietary nursing home hospital and is not a member. So every hospital but one is a member.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm an urban legislator, but and have had very little experience with urban hospitals. Just as luck would have it, or bad luck would have it, I have had a lot of experience with the Douglas County Hospital, from taking my mother-in-law there on many emergency trips, from taking my grandson there after he fell out of a tree and got a concussion, and literally everything in between. And I have had terrific experience there. I would not say one thing bad about the Douglas County Hospital, and I'd say many, many things good. Are you representing them?
Madam Chair, and for the record, we represent the Douglas County Hospital. It's in Alexandria, and it is, in addition to Hennepin County Medical Center, it is a county hospital that is owned and operated by the county, and it is a terrific hospital. So.
Representative Wagenius.
And so it's safe to say, Madam Chair, that the Douglas County Hospital supports the position you've just put forward.
Ms. Krenke.
Madam Chair, hospitals, as you can imagine, have disagreements between urban, rural, small, and large hospitals. Our hospital association strongly and unanimously supports the early Medicaid enrollment.
Thank you. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Krenke, you're aware of one of the hospitals in my district, the Virginia Regional Medical Center, owned by the people of the city of Virginia, yet it's a regional medical center surrounded by, you know, five mines that on any given day could have a catastrophe. And they've been losing money for the last 3 years, and I believe a lot of it has to do with what's happening in Washington and here with cuts. But they also have a nursing home on the third and fourth mm-hmm. floor. So, and a lot of those people in the nursing home, I've heard better than 75% are on Medicaid almost immediately when they spend what little they've saved. So what does this bill do to a hospital like that that actually also has an attached nursing home? Is it a double hit, a quadruple hit? What happens?
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, we have 60 hospitals in Minnesota that have an attached nursing home. And the hospitals in many of those communities have been helping to support the nursing home. And so what has happened as hospital financing goes bad, it's tied together with the nursing home funding. I will point one of the things that makes Virginia somewhat having difficult finances is they do have a large Medicaid population. And so when there are cuts in the Medicaid program, those hospitals that have more Medicaid patients take a larger disproportionate cut.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
And Ms. Krenke, this bill with the amendment, what does it do as
Ms.
far as, you know, what's happening the last 3 years up there?
Ms. Krenke.
Madam Chair, what this amendment does, Representative Rukavina, it rolls back the early Medicaid program that Governor Dayton signed on January 5th, and yet it doesn't really return the individuals to Minnesota Care or to the prior GAMC program before we had sort of the pilot. So in essence, there are now about 90,000 individuals who could potentially lose all of their coverage. And I want to say potentially, because we don't know if any of the hospitals would even consider this new CCDS program. So potentially, you would have an additional 100,000 individuals without insurance.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, just it's on a personal note, and I'm kind of curious. What do you and Phil talk about at night? Or do you talk at all? Yeah, you don't have to answer that one.
Ms. Krenke?
Madam Chair, have any of you all ever seen Jim Carville and Mary Madeline?
Representative Eakin, and members, if there were about six or seven people that wanted to testify, so to the degree we can keep this short and move on, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and Ms. Krinke. Noticed a kind of a pattern here with previous bills where it seems that burdens are being shifted more and more onto middle and lower income folks. I've seen it, you know, with the tax bill where it's being shifted more onto property taxes, and we got a figure of you know, possibly $1.2 or $1.4 billion in property tax increases. Same thing with the higher ed bill. We see tuition going up. They're expecting possibly up to $200 million of tuition increases. It seems in this bill there's a shift onto insurance payers, premiums going up. Obviously, these cuts are going to have an impact because you're going to have uncompensated care. Those costs are going to be passed along from the hospitals to those that do have insurance in the form of higher premiums. Do you have any figures as to how high premiums are going to go as a result of this bill?
Madam Chair and Representative Eakin, the Milliman Report, Milliman Foundation, says that approximately 15% of all private premiums are due to underpayment from government payers, both Medicaid and Medicare. So roughly a 15% cost shift is estimated, but that makes it sound too easy, quite frankly, because I don't know that hospitals can continue to cost shift to our private businesses. The businesses are saying we can't take anymore, and so what we're seeing now is more of a cutback in services, employment, and other areas for the hospitals to make cuts. I wish we could just snap our fingers and say that we'll cost shift all of this, but that's simply not the case.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess my question would be directed to Representative Eakin. He just made an untrue comment that the tax bill raises property taxes $1.2 billion. I was just wondering if Representative Eakin had a fiscal note on that.
Representative Eakin.
We're working on it.
All right. Ms. Krinke, I think we'll let somebody else come to the stand if they have more to add.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Patrick Ness, Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We're a coalition of over 150 service providers from all corners of the state, shelters, transitional housing, affordable housing, nonprofits. Also part of the Save GAMC coalition, which worked over 18 months to preserve care, and I think we'll rename our coalition the GMC Please Go Away and Never Come Back Coalition, is kind of where we're at. It's a wonderful program, but something better came along, and we really just look at how people are being cared for, and then this early MA expansion is improving people's lives every day. There were definitely some good reforms in CCDS, some successes that we saw with a couple of the hospitals, but it also created enormous gaps in services, huge problems with access to care. We can build on these successes. We have lots of good ideas, but we don't need to throw out the entire system. Greater Minnesota is greatly affected by this new proposal. We have there was a mom in Albert Lea who had to drive up to Duluth to pick up her son with serious mental health, physical health issues. Drive from Albert Lea to Duluth, down to I think it was North Memorial, get the care, drive him back to Duluth, back to Albert Lea. This is one of the examples of access issues. Jobs, it's I think someone talks about 20,000 healthcare jobs would be affected by this. But mostly for us, it's about the people, less than $8,000 per year, very, very, very sick, very poor. Many of them are homeless, as we heard in the last session. We have lots of military veterans who have benefited from this program as well, mental health issues, people waiting for disability. So the people will still get the care. It's just a matter of how bad they let things get before they get it, and then who ends up paying for it in the end. As members of Ways and Means, you're in a critical role in balancing the revenue and the spending in our state. We honor that responsibility. We do ask that we start by agreeing that there's not so much as a revenue or a spending problem. We know there's people of good intent on both sides of that argument, but that we have a human suffering problem, and there are very few people in this state that suffer more than those on this program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Next, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Troy Tobenheim. I'm the director of the Metro Minnesota Council on Graduate Medical Education, and I'd like to make some comments on the medical education and research costs referred to as MERC funding. First, with a thank you to Representative Abler and his committee for recognizing the funding for this program and the amendment to add additional funding for this program. This program comes in what I would refer to as two categories. The first category is direct payments from the state that go to entities throughout the state for direct payments, and this bill makes changes to this funding from its current form and identifies some targeted areas that are areas that address disparities in health professional training throughout the state, much of which we commend and we say we recognize as a need and would offer again to support Representative Abler in the final version of this language to address and recognize some existing funding in those regards. The second category, the primary category of this funding, comes in the form of state funds that are matched from the federal government, and those matching funds are granted through the state Department of Health to the clinical training sites of health professionals of various categories of professionals, and the bill changes the formula from its existing state on some of these funds being distributed in a fashion that is different and potentially at risk of federal match loss. And so we're concerned about that and concerned also that this new formula would leave some of the state's training areas, potentially in greater Minnesota, without the same level of funding that they have currently to meet these training needs. In medical education, particularly physician training, there are additional sources of funds, federal Medicare dollars, that go to hospitals to train physicians throughout the state. And the key to this is that the Medicare dollars are based on 1996 level of funding and are not sufficient to fund the number of physicians we have in training currently. With the loss of these MERC funds going to some of these sites that currently get this funding, some of these sites will have to train less physicians going into the future when we understand and know that a greater number of health professionals will be needed.
Thank you, Mr. Tobenheim. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, just a comment.
Representative Abler, and the next person that's ready to testify could come to the stand while you're making comments. And just
talking to all these individuals about this program. I'm just trying to extract more value for our MERC dollars to focus on health disparities. So we're on the hook to look after these people, these needs, and we're trying to help them get well and help them be more productive. So.
Anybody else like to testify briefly on the A82 amendment?
Yes. You bet.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Marie Rigstead. I work at Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Our mission is to serve those most in need while calling for justice in the community. Last session, Catholic Charities worked with a coalition of other organizations that Mr. Ness mentioned, the Save GAMC Coalition, and Governor Pawlenty to develop a replacement for the broken and defunded General Assistance Medical Care Program. Because poverty and poor health are often very closely intertwined, we know that MA enrollees are often very, very sick and very, very poor. They are our fellow Minnesotans. They're our fathers and mothers, our brothers and sisters, our veterans who have served our country, and people hit hardest by the economic downturn. We need to protect those living in poverty and crisis in our communities throughout the state. It's unclear at this point how many providers would participate in the suggested reinstated GAMC program. We're very concerned that GAMC re-enrollees will not have access to service. There's been a lot of talk about compassion in the committee today, and there are many definitions of compassion. But pretending to provide health care to those most in need in our state while not actually providing access to that health care is not compassion. We strongly oppose the amendment to roll back the early opt-in to MA.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Ringstead? Anybody else like to testify briefly on the A82 amendment? Welcome to the committee, sir, if you'll state your name for the record,
please. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Matt Burdick, testifying on behalf of NAMI Minnesota. Sue Abderholden from our organization originally intended to testify, and she apologizes that she can't be here. I'll be brief. Our concerns are with the reinstatement of the CCDS system. Particularly, we're concerned with access to care for people with mental illnesses, especially those in greater Minnesota. And we're also concerned with the loss of the model mental health benefit set currently available under MA. And these are a full range of benefits that would no longer be available to these to this population. And we have a handout that I'd like handed out that explains these concerns.
If you'd give that to one of the pages, they'd be happy to distribute that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Any questions for Mr. Burdick? Seeing none, thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, sir, if you'll state your name for the record.
Yes, good morning. My name is Ron Brand. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And in prior to this, in 2009, 16,000 people received outpatient and community-based mental health services. Many of the people are, as you know, many of the people are very poor. They have chronic health conditions. Oftentimes, they are poor because they have health conditions and the circumstances have led them to spend down into poverty, and they do not yet qualify for disability. 70% of the people on this program have a mental illness, a chemical dependency, or both. Oftentimes, they have a combination with other health conditions that when this program, the CCDS, was enacted, there were thousands of people who are already in treatment with our member organizations where their care was disrupted. During the last year, many of the providers provided services without compensation for this group. Others worked to shift people onto Minnesota care, an option which is unlikely to be successful going forward. In some cases, counties helped be able to fund critical services for crisis services, emergency psychiatry services, residential services that would help make those available to people who were essentially uninsured in greater Minnesota. It's good to focus on the earlier treatment, on the outpatient and community-based services as you seek to do in some of your reforms, and as opposed to the hospital. However, there is nothing in the bill that would suggest that there would be any requirement to contract or work with the community mental health centers or others. As providers, they provide services without regard to the ability to pay on a sliding fee schedule, and they're sitting ducks for the cost shifting that would occur within this program. And I would urge you to turn back the proposal.
Thank you, Mr.
Strongly.
Brand. Are there any questions for Mr. Brand? All right. Anybody else like to testify on the A82 amendment briefly? All right, seeing none, I'm assuming there may be some additional questions. Representative Carlson.
Well, Madam Chair, I indicated earlier that, and I still feel that even though we did have some testimony, that this bill really should go to the Health and Human Service Finance Committee with these tremendous changes where you have committee members that have had a background throughout the entire legislative session of involvement with this particular bill. So, Madam Chair, I would like to move that the Senate file, what is the number here now? I had the House file.
760.
That Senate file 760 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee.
Representative Carlson moves that Senate File 760, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health Finance.
And I would like a roll call.
And ask for a roll call. Any questions on the motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
I would oppose the motion.
Thank you. Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Downey.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Abler.
No.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
No.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Breinert.
Yes.
Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
Yes.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Eakin.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hackbarth. Representative Hamilton. Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Howes.
No.
Representative Huntley.
Yes.
Representative Kahn. Representative Kiffmeyer.
No.
Representative Lanning.
No.
Representative Lincheski.
Yes.
Representative McNamara. Representative Nornes.
No.
Representative Pulowski. Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawick.
Yes.
Representative Smith. Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Representative Westrom.
No.
Representative McNamara.
No.
The Carlson motion fails 11 to 15, 11 ayes, 15 nays. Are there any questions, additional questions on the bill as amended? All right, Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, seeing that there are no questions, I'd like to request a roll call on the final passage. And if you could state the motion that is before us.
Representative Abler, would you like to restate your motion?
That Senate file 760 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. That work also.
Representative
Madam
Carlson.
Chair, I would like to amend that motion by saying without certification. And Madam Chair, the reason that I'm raising that question is basically the same reason that I raised the question last night. You know, one of the main roles of this particular committee is to establish the budget resolution, and then the reason that the bills come before us after they've been passed out of the finance committees is to make sure that they fit with in the budget resolution. We had testimony here this morning that there's $750 million, $750 million that is in this bill without a fiscal note, and I don't think that we can in good conscience move this bill forward and say by committee action that it's certified. And last night when we had the discussion, they said one interpretation of being certified would be committee action. And I would ask the committee to give this serious thought. It's quite frankly kind of an in-house thing in terms of following our rules and the purposes of a committee and the recommendation. But I think making sure that we are following our rules, in this case, by committee action, saying a bill is either certified or not certified. And I would like to amend the motion to include without certification.
Representative Carlson. We had the discussion last night about you and I having a discussion with the chief clerk around this issue. I would oppose your amendment to the Abler motion at this time. There seems to be some confusion about whether it's the action of signing the committee report or a letter being posted. And so amid that confusion, I'm going to ask that members not adopt your motion to amend the Abler motion on the bill.
Well, Madam Chair.
And I understand it's a timing thing, And I don't even know if I necessarily agree with you. I just don't want to get into a position here where we have a bill on the floor that doesn't have the ability to be certified and has to go back to committee.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the bill would move forward. It would just be a clear signal to the Minnesota House of Representatives that there were serious questions as to whether this bill was within its targets or not due to that three-quarters of a billion dollar question that's before us without a or any fiscal notes. I would like to request a roll call on my amendment without certification.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to speak in favor of the motion. I too have very concerns, great concerns about the numbers being used here, and we have a serious problem that needs to be fixed. And by not using numbers that are certified and real and that have been confirmed, we're really, I think, passing the problem on and not really fixing it. And that's been the problem over the last several years, just pushing the problem down the road. And we need to have confirmed numbers. And I just thought I'd mention, too, to Representative Davids, you'd asked about the $1.2 to $1.4 billion figure that I used earlier. We do have a fiscal note, or I guess it's called a revenue note for taxes, and they say over the next 4 years it'll be $1.3 billion in property tax increases that they're anticipating. So,
Representative Davids.
What'll it be in 15 years?
So
we look out 2 years here, and what we found in tax committee, Madam Chair, is that most of those projections have been made aren't even in half. So to sit here and say that they're going to be $1.3 billion, I think, is irresponsible at best.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to speak in favor of the motion. You know, it was talked about, Representative Abler talked about, I said, on Health and Human Services, that you really want to get the bills to conference committee to negotiate with the governor. And really, it's the responsibility of the members of the House to present a budget that works and that is balanced coming out of committee. The governor has also sent the majority a letter saying they're going to need to pass their bills out of conference committee balanced, and then he will start to negotiate. This is in reference, Representative Abler, to Governor Dayton and your comments about what he might want to do. I think he stated what he wants to do. He has given us his budget. He has showed us that he has cut. He has showed us that he has raised revenue, and he has balanced his budget. And he expects us to do the same. So I think it's important to certify this and that we move towards a balanced budget.
Thank you. Any additional comments on the Carlson amendment to the motion? And you asked for a roll call on that, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Sure.
Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Downey.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Abler.
No.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
No.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Breiner.
Yes.
Representative Biskins.
Nay.
Representative Champion.
Yes.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Eakin.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hackbarth. Representative Hamilton. Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Howes.
No.
Representative Huntley.
Yes.
Representative Kahn. Representative Kiffmeyer.
No.
Representative Lanning.
No.
Representative Lincheski.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
No.
Representative Nornes.
No.
Representative Pulowski. Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawick.
Yes.
Representative Smith. Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Representative Westrom.
No.
The Carlson amendment to the motion fails on a 10-16 vote. Representative Eakin.
Representative Davids asked what it would be in 15 years for the property tax increases, and I calculated about $5.5 billion. So.
All right. Any additional comments or questions on the bill as amended? All right. Mr. Smith will take the roll on. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Huntley.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members,
This bill has serious cuts to people with disabilities, serious cuts to the elderly, and huge cuts to our health care providers. We've heard a lot about block grants, and what we're doing with this bill is taking $1.7 billion state and federal money currently budgeted to go to our health care providers for the sickest of the sick. We're taking that $1.7 billion, reducing it to $400 million all state money as a block grant, basically to hospitals and clinics to take care of this people. That's a 75% reduction in the spending for people that have severe disabilities. So I urge you to vote against this bill.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Any additional comments? Mr. Smith will take the roll on the bill as amended.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler.
Yes.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Biskins.
No.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth. Representative Hamilton. Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative House.
Yes.
Representative Huntley.
No.
Representative Kahn. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yes.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski. Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Smith. Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrom.
Yes.
By a vote of 15 to 11, the Abler motion to pass Senate File 760 as amendment to the General Register prevails. Next item on our
thank you, Madam Abler. Chairman.
The next item on our agenda is House File 8. Representative Gottwald, again, members, this is a similar situation that passed in that House File 8 is actually contained and paid for in the bill that we just passed. If you're interested, it's contained in Article 6, Sections 1, 2, 3, 16, 86, 92, and 107, and Article 4, Section 3. Welcome to the committee, Representative Gottwald. I will move approval of House File 8 that it be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know time is brief. House File 8 is a bill we've been working on for some time in the Health and Human Services area. It preserves eligibility for adults without children who are eligible for Minnesota care between 133% and 250% of federal poverty guidelines. It provides affordable, portable, private coverage to low-income Minnesotans, typically described as the working poor. It saves the state dollars. It improves access to health care by paying providers commercial rates instead of the low public program rates that we just heard testified to on the previous bill by the Minnesota Hospital Association representative. It saves roughly $21 million in the first biennium and about $90 million in the second biennium. Madam Chair, I don't know how much more detail you want me to go into. I could go into more, but we'll...
We'll find out here, Representative Gottwald. Are there any questions for Representative Gottwald on House File 8? All right, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 8 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
House File 8 is passed and referred to the General Register. Thank you. Members, I'm not aware of any additional business to come before the committee, so the meeting's adjourned.